Going off of our previous podcast about chapters 3, 4, and 5, we talked a lot about graphs. In chapter 6, they talk about 1D graphs and how they can use graphs that have a little bit of data to lie a lot. How do you guys feel about that?
I think the idea of using a little bit of data to cover a broad topic is, you know, quite clever. It's misleading, of course, but I think that, you know, using that in that way, like I said before, is clever because, you know, you can trick people into believing that, you know, you surveyed the whole entire country when you only surveyed 3 states.
People don't have a very large attention span most of the time, so they want to get data as quickly as they can. So by doing this, they think that you're just trying to help them out, but then instead you're just tricking them.
Yeah, like, I have like the attention. I've been told I have like the attention span of like a melting ice cube, and if I saw a graph that might not have all the data on it, but it looked pretty good, I'd just be like, oh, okay, whatever, because you just look at it at a glance. You're not actually trying to figure out what's going on.
Good point. If you guys were to survey a broad spectrum of people and create graphs for it, would you try and make your graphs look scarier?
I would show what's actually there. And, you know, and I would base it off of that information. So say if I was just surveying how many people watch TV in the country, and, you know, obviously I can't survey the whole entire country. So if I do a sample size of about 100 people, I can just say within this region, this is how many people watch TV. And then from there, you can make your own basis and assumptions. But, you know, I'm not going to tell you something that I don't have. I'm not going to lie to you.
I think, like, it's a good idea that if you're doing something that requires a big sample size and you realize, oh, hey, I can't actually get this sample size, it might be a better idea and more beneficial to everyone if you just change what you're saying. Maybe not instead of the whole world, just this region, and then let people go from there because they're going to do what they want to do.
If I wanted to like trick people with the statistics so it's in my favor, I would do the same thing, because if you have less, it not only makes them want to want to read it more, but also the less I have, the less I have to like try to lie with.
So less is more, basically.
Right. Let's talk about chapter 7. Chapter 7 is about semi-attached figures. It speaks on how you can create a correlation between variables even when they don't really match up. The quote inside of Chapter 7 goes, "If you can't prove what you want to prove, prove something else and demonstrate that they're both the same." What do you guys think about this?
I feel as though this is also a very clever way of lab statistics, because you're not telling them anything wrong, you're just leaving it up to them to assume, and if they assume something by themselves, they're at fault and not you.
Right.
It's like, it's kind of like avoiding the blame, like how you, like, does anyone remember getting in trouble when you were in, like, in kindergarten?
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have a friend who has a little brother, and he goes, oh, my big sister did it. It's kind of just like pushing the blame off of yourself so it doesn't look like you're doing anything.
All right.
I think that it's not so much pushing the blame off of yourself, mm-hmm. It's more so, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission.
Yes,
so if you go through a different means of getting your information, meaning you go somewhere else, look at some other data, and then relate it back to it, they can't really blame you nearly as much as they could if you were just to, let's say, survey 1,000 people and say, this is the one thing that's happening.
Right. I remember when we were talking about the ice cream sales and drownings and, you know, how they relate. And, you know, the only way they really relate is through the summertime, and that, you know, they increase because of the summertime. But, you know, they were trying to make it seem as though because it's the summertime, these two things are related. But, I mean, ice cream sales and drownings don't really have anything to do with each other, do they?
Well, some people don't ask themselves the simple question, does this make sense? Because they think everyone, like, goes and, like, checks the data and, like, oh, these guys know what they're doing.
Right, as long as there's some kind of math or some type of number involved, people glance over it, and, you know, that's really what's the problem here.
I think it's more of the calculus effect, where if you see a large number, mm-hmm. and like an equation to go with that large number, you're just like, nope, I'm just going to accept that they did their math and walk away from it.
Yep.
Yeah. Chapter 8 talks about cause and effect and how people will personally mix them up to put them in their favor. How do you guys feel about this?
I feel that cause and effect is a general thing that's always there, even outside of math. So every causation has a effect to happen on it. So let's say I push a ball. That ball is going to roll until the friction underneath of it slows it down. The cause was me pushing it, the effect was it slowed down. So I feel that the cause and effect in math is more to react and effect out of the people that it's being shown to, not as much react and effect out of the thing that it's studying.
I think it's really difficult to mix cause and effect up. And I mean, you have to use a lot of numbers to cover up the fact that you're doing that, which makes it all the more clever of the person who's doing it. Because, I mean, one thing happens and therefore this happens. A plus B equals C. We all know how that goes. But, you know, it's really hard to say, you know, that it rained, it's raining, therefore there are clouds. Or, like, you know, like, to say things in a backwards meaning and then to still have people believe in it really shows that, you know, lying with statistics is an actual thing and that, you know, it really does happen.
I really feel like it's really just, we make it a little too easy for people to lie to us like that, because as Americans, we kind of just think everything is kind of given to us. We have everything we need, so we don't really think that when they're lying to us, that they're lying to us, because we don't really care.
So you guys don't think this is like an easy mistake to make, or?
I think it's a purposeful mistake to make. So, if you're doing things with effect and cause instead of cause and effect, then you basically tell them what's happening, and then you make something up to make that happen.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when the news, you turn on the news, and they're like, 60 people died. That's the effect. And then it's like, tune in at 6 o'clock to see why. So, you know, they got you hooked because they told you the effect, and now you're trying to figure out why that happened.
Alright, now let's talk about Chapter 9. In Chapter 9, the author coins a term, statisticulate. Try to say that 10 times fast. In this chapter, they talk about how when somebody writes something in an article and they make the reader do math, the reader just more than likely will assume that it's true. So, what does that make you guys think?
I feel that it's lying to the basis of the public, because most people might not have taken statistics, and then if they do the math, they'll get it wrong. So,
or they make like a lot of assumptions.
I think when you make people statisticulate, I think it's a really interesting method, because when you make people have to do math or have to take a long time to, you know, look at a graph, and you have to make them go further than what you're giving them, then they're automatically going to believe that, you know, that this is a legit thing and this is real, because, you know, you're making them do math to figure things out and to get the answer. So they're like, whoa, there's no way in the world this is fake and that they're lying to me because you just made me do a bunch of math.
I feel some people that get cocky while they're trying to do math, and you're like, I know how to do this and I trust myself. So when I get this done, that means that's automatically what it means.
And it kind of gives the reader more of, like, a sense of, like, accomplishment. Like, oh, I did this thing. So maybe because they didn't do it, so maybe I'm actually right. Maybe they don't know what the answer is or whatever it is. And they kind of just feel a sense of accomplishment where they're like, I can't really be wrong, can I?
Yeah, when, like, you're reading an article or the news reporter says, you do the math. When they say that line, then you're like, you know, you start to count in your head, like, okay, let me do the math. Whoa, that is a big amount. And you're like, whoa. And what's happening is They just made you do the math, so you, and you know, make you feel like you did something.
And sometimes you're like, no. And you're like, I'll take your word for it.
Right.
Yeah. You could just be like, I see numbers. Let me back away from this slowly. Just accept it for what it is.
Right.
In chapter 10, it talks about how to talk back to statistics. Basically, it's a cheat sheet for the readers to tell them how to ask questions when they're looking for answers out of a statistical base. Do you guys feel this was useful to be put in the book?
Yeah, I think after showing you all of the methods and all of the things to look for and all the things to see through, they show you, you know, the solution to the problem, which is a really nice way to wrap up a book and a really nice way to, you know, show that, hey, you know, there's a way through this. It's not just like, you know, they're lying to you. They're lying to you. There's a way to fight back.
I feel as though it's good that they put it at the end, because at the beginning, I would have no idea what to do with this. I'd be like, oh, hey, thanks for the advice, bro.
And then also it's kind of like there are a lot of people who will be like, oh, they're lying to you. They're lying to you. But then they don't actually tell you how to fix it. It's just kind of like, hey, here's this problem, but I'm not going to tell you how to fix it because I don't care enough.
You know, you don't know how, like, so it, you know, it makes the reader feel grateful that this is a fixable problem, because, you know, sitting in front of your TV, you just start to think, you know, all of this crap is lies. So, you know, and you can't do anything about it.
Basically the silver lining in a thunderstorm.
Yep.
Okay, guys, how do you guys feel about the book?
I feel that it's a knowledge base for people who don't necessarily know about statistics. So it tells you what's wrong with it, and then it also tells you how to fix it.
I appreciated how easy to understand this book was. And, you know, I like the way the examples were given for each chapter. And I like, you know, how it all made sense and how at the end they told you the solution to the problem. One thing I would change about it is that, you know, the title, because I don't feel like it's lying. I really don't feel like it is lying at all. While helpful, I really feel like this book is dangerous, not in like a bad way, but in like a way to wake up everybody. And if everybody read this book, you know, they would be, you know, a lot better for it. And, you know, people would have to change their ways, and big corporations couldn't lie anymore like that.
It's like this book was, it was easy to read for people who don't really think mathy. I'm going to be an artist. I'm going to art school, and I'm not a very mathy person. I get confused by this stuff, and big numbers scare me. And this book didn't really use that many numbers. It used words to express what the numbers meant. And it gave the reader a sense of accomplishment. Hey, I finished this book. I'm not going to completely fail for not knowing what's going on in the world. And it gives the reader just a sense of, oh, I can fix this. I'm not completely going to be used.
Yeah.
I feel as though the fact that they put in a lot of images to help with all their like facts made people more willing to read this book. Because I know a lot of people didn't want to read it when they heard how many pages it was. But when they're like, oh, hey, there's a lot of pictures in it, it helps you explain through images. Like, oh, okay.
As for me, I'm going into computer science and I'm going to take a minor in mathematics. So if I have to sell a program or something like that, this would be very useful for me because I can use statistics to necessarily lie with my numbers, but also help my own profit gain.
So who do you guys recommend this book for?
I would say up-and-coming businessmen or people who watch the news all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I would recommend it for people who are unemployed.
I feel as though like this affects everyone, so anyone who has a chance to read it should read it.
I feel like it's just the kind of book that when you really want to know what's going on and you want to know what you can do to make sure that you don't get completely screwed by big corporations, it's a good idea.
All right, that was our review for High Life Statistics. We hope you enjoyed.